Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Atlanta Vision Institute. The Atlanta Vision Institute was the first in Georgia to use SMILE, the most advanced laser eye surgery procedure. This procedure is done with a high-tech precision laser. It's simple, takes about 6 to 8 minutes in its entirety. It's an easy recovery, requiring minimal post-op care. Most people are amazed at how effortless it is. You're going to experience substantially improved vision just a few hours after this surgery. Dr. Ashraf was on staff at Johns Hopkins University. He's board certified, and he's completed over 40,000 LASIK procedures. So go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute. Check this out. You can mention my name and get 20% off a consultation. To learn more, go to atlanta2020.com/Matt. That's me, M-A-T-T. atlanta2020.com/Matt. Go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute at atlanta2020.com. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. I think you can hear that. It's a bit of rain coming down. I'm outside on the front porch here in the summer of 2018. My air conditioning is working again, but the sound is really good out here when it's not pouring rain. My office setup, you guys don't give a shit about my office setup. Anyhow, it's gorgeous. We're in the rain. I'm about to take my kids out for a run. And maybe we'll get rained on. It'll be fun, right? Run around with the kids, get rained on and whatnot. On today's program, Brenda Corner from the Atlanta Opera. We had this chat a little bit ago, back in the old office in the Alkaloid. I apologize in the delay in getting this to you, but as you know, as you hear me say all the time, I have so much freaking content, I don't know what to do with myself. Oh, hey, and welcome to the program, Atlanta Vision Institute. Thinking about getting that LASIK surgery? I am. Been wearing glasses a long time. Maybe I'm going to get some. You can, and get a discount. Atlanta2020/Matt. Go check them out. All right, let's get to today's episode. Brenda and I, not too long ago, away we go.
You're a professional, so you know how to hold a microphone.
I do know how to hold a microphone.
Many don't.
I believe that is true.
It's odd, but you have to, like, they'll have it over here, or they play with the cord.
Yeah. Well, because if you've never used one, you're like, what is this thing? This sort of weird-ish ball that's existing in this, in the bottom of my peripheral vision. And why is my hand stuck here? It's a strange thing if you've never used one.
I guess, yeah, it's hard because I've held plenty of microphones, and so it comes quite naturally to me. So
right. Well, it's everything comes with experience, right?
Right.
Learn with
so
experience.
I always start with the easy ones.
Okay.
Okay. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Canada.
Okay.
I grew up in a small town in southern Alberta, which is like Montana. Go straight up.
Got it. You got to tell people that because we only know like Toronto.
Yes. So I learned very early on to just like, you got to find the state
and then you go up.
So Montana, go up,
right.
And then imagine what you think Montana looks like. Cows and, you know, that sort of thing.
What if I told you I was in Montana?
Really?
On a comedy tour.
Really?
In 2000 and, let's say 2000 or 2002 or 3 or somewhere around there.
Okay.
And boy, howdy.
Yes. Montana is, well, I don't really know, actually. I can only speak about Alberta, which is its northern neighbor, but Alberta's pretty cowboy territory.
This is pre iPhone.
Right.
And maybe even not pre cell phone, but I don't think I was taking a lot of pictures on my phone at the time. I think the resolution would have been too.
Yeah.
So I took a lot of regular photos, mm-hmm. and then uploaded them, but that was like six laptops ago. So who knows where they are?
Got it.
So it's gorgeous.
It's stunningly beautiful. The Rocky Mountains are incredible. And like, I don't know, again, I can't speak about Montana, but in Alberta, the thing that I love about it is that, particularly where I grew up, if you sort of looked at one side of the house, it was like bald, flat prairie, yellow sort of grain fields, literally as far as you could see. And if you turn
literally
as far as you could see. And then the other side was these sort of rolling hills and then the ginormous grandeur of the Rocky Mountains.
Right. And so what did your parents do?
My parents are actually, well, my mom is in the arts. She's a costume designer. She's a costume designer for film and television. And my dad worked in the oil industry. And they also had a farm. So we lived literally in the middle of nowhere looking at mountains.
So how did your mom work in the film industry?
There's a lot of film in Alberta. There's a lot. There's a lot of film in Canada, actually, but particularly in Alberta.
Well, I know that years ago, they did this whole big, like, massive tax break for Toronto. So all the New York stuff was filming there. But I didn't know about the rest of...
Canada in general has big tax breaks for film.
Right.
And each province is a little bit different. The thing with Alberta is that because it has sort of bald flat prairie and it has rolling hills and it has mountains and it has this weird sort of desert badland area, you can kind of shoot an awful lot of different places without being too far away from a major international airport.
Right.
So handy for film.
Right. And how long have you been in America?
This is my second year.
Oh, so you're very fresh off the boat.
Oh, I'm very fresh off the boat.
So how long are you allowed to stay here?
I am here on a 3-year O-1 visa.
Right. Are you concerned that, you know...
Yes and no. I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. So being concerned about it is not like not going to change anything.
Right.
So instead, I just do what I do and get the contracts while I can get the contracts and work and learn from as many people as I can while I'm here.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. So as a young person, mm-hmm. what did you enjoy doing?
In Alberta?
In life.
In life. I always loved the arts. So I forced my parents to let me be in ballet class and in singing class and in choir and in drama. And
usually it's the other way around. Aren't parents usually like, hey, try this thing?
Yeah, no, it was definitely the other way. I have distinct memories of being about 6 and informing my mother that I would be taking ballet class. So she had best find me a place to take ballet class.
Did your parents have a lot of like soundtrack albums that inspired you?
We had one copy of Phantom of the Opera, okay. which I'm pretty sure I ruined from listening to quite so many times.
Right.
But that's the only one I really remember.
So you weren't big show tunes growing up?
No, when I was little. I mean, eventually when I discovered that there was such a thing as musical theater,
right.
I was like, yes, please, I will learn all of them.
Right.
And at one point could probably sing them all by memory.
Right. Do you want to do like a duet?
We could. I think for the betterment of your listeners, we should not, because it's not really a pleasant sound.
What isn't a pleasant sound?
Oh, me singing.
Oh, me singing is really not a pleasant sound.
Well, so then us together might just cause like an apocalypse to happen. Okay. I don't think we want to go that far.
Right.
But I mean, I love them. You know what I love the most about musicals is that it's story through music.
Right.
Like I love theater. I think theater's amazing. But right. there's always this sort of slightly added element when you put music into
right.
it.
Right. You know, I've been to New York, but I've never been to Broadway. I'm trying to think the only like actual like musical theater that I've seen is like maybe like here at mm-hmm. like Avenue Q, like at
yeah.
the little Five Points mm-hmm. thing. I don't know what that's called. You don't know what it's called either. You just got here.
I just got here. I don't know what it's called.
Aren't you excited to be on the Atlanta podcast?
I super am, actually. I super am.
Are you familiar with it at all?
The podcast?
This program, yes.
Yes, because I listened to some of it.
Okay.
Because when I was going to be on it, I was like, oh, I should kind of find out. Like,
okay, what did you listen to and what did you discover?
The last one I listened to was The Little Doors.
Okay. Tiny Doors, yes.
Tiny Doors. Gross. Which was really interesting because I remember I was walking around the Beltline.
Right.
And I couldn't figure out. I kept seeing this, like, there was like this tiny little door over near Paris en Ponce, I think. Or, yeah. There was this tiny little door and I just remember like looking at a friend I was with and I was like, what is that?
Right.
And They're like, oh, it's just a thing. It's just a thing right. in Atlanta. It's just, I was like,
right.
What? Like, I can't even imagine what this is.
Right.
In sort of the Pacific Northwest, they sometimes have a thing where people will make like little like fairy doors or
right.
elf
right.
like huts or stuff like that. And I thought, well, maybe that's what it is or like something like
I
that.
I think that's what sort of inspired her. I think
so too. I mean, it seems I'm trying to remember similar.
Right. But I think we had that on the conversation. If you didn't listen to the whole thing, that's fine. I'm just always curious what people, if they don't know me or they aren't that familiar with what makes them just sort of like randomly pick, you know, mm-hmm. a certain one.
Yeah. It was that one only because I knew of it because I'd right. actually seen it.
You're like,
it.
Oh, I should pick this.
I was like, oh, I've actually
seen this. I should
seen this. I wonder what this is or how. I wonder what this is.
Right.
As opposed to it just being a door.
Right.
That you randomly see. I was like, oh, I should find out what that is.
Right.
But yeah, it was. So that was the one. But you're right. I didn't get the whole thing. Didn't listen to the whole thing.
It's okay.
But
you can go back and listen and learn about. She's fascinating.
I will. The thing seemed fascinating. So.
Yeah. Now I lost my train of thought. So you're in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to, you want to be somewhere in the arts.
Yes.
You're not sure which piece though.
Oh, I mean, I was pretty clear. I was going to be a prima ballerina.
That was like,
there was no option.
Right.
Then I like was 12 and I suddenly grew too much.
And it's like, nope.
And I was like, well, that's not going to happen. I'm right. now almost a foot too tall to be a ballerina.
Right.
Okay. New plan. And so then I was like, okay, that's all right. I will be an actress. So I went to school and I studied acting and I studied music and I became an actress and I was working professionally as an actress in theater. And then someone said to me, hey, have you ever heard of opera? And I was like, I don't do opera. Opera, no, I don't do opera. And they were like, what's basically Shakespeare and musical theater at the same time?
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, it is. And I just fell in love with it. That's like how that
so then
happened.
So then where do you draw the line of range of I'm good at this and I'm not good at this?
And what do you mean?
Well, you said you were a bad singer.
I'm a bad singer. Yeah, I'm a bad singer.
But you perform in operas.
Oh, I do not perform in operas.
Oh, okay.
I direct operas.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, no, I do
but
not
perform. But when you said like you got in operas, I was like, okay, well, if you had to sing somewhat.
I got into opera. I was like, never, and no, I do not sing. It's a better choice, I promise.
Do you sing in the car, in the shower?
I do sing in the car. I do sing in the car.
What's on your Spotify or your Pandora? What's your choice of listening thing?
Super nerdy right now.
Okay.
But I just finished a production of Elisir d'Amore, which is...
No idea what that is.
It's okay. It's an opera. It's called The Elixir of Love.
Okay.
I really loved it. It was a wonderful production. I had a wonderful cast and a wonderful time. So now I'm just listening to it on repeat, enjoying the music. Because it's really lovely, lovely music.
Right. So I want to go back to this like musical, like what are some of your favorite, I want to say CDs, but I don't think people even listen to those anymore. But are you old enough that you had CDs in your car?
Yeah, I had
okay.
CDs.
Okay.
Okay. Favorite CDs.
Like what was in your like.
Growing up?
Or just like, I remember like when the Rent CD came out, people went bananas.
For a really long time, it was always musicals. So okay. like Wicked.
Right.
Avenue Q.
Right.
Rent for a while.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, hold on. No, there are other things.
Right.
Actually, recently I've been listening to Come From Away, which is a new musical that's on Broadway right now,
right.
which I think is incredible. It's a story of what happened when all these planes got grounded during 9/11.
Oh, wow.
And couldn't take off. And they landed in this really small town in Canada, in Newfoundland. And the town is like 7,000 people, and 7,000 people landed on the planes. And so it was all about like, it's all about what happened. And
that sounds cool.
It's really a fascinating story. And it actually happened. So I've been listening to that a lot, which is really interesting. I've been listening to a bunch of acoustical guitar also recently that I just think Tommy Manuel, I don't know if you've heard of him. He is, God, he's an incredible guitarist. Just like so... soulful, and he can make one guitar sound like an entire orchestra. I don't know how he does it, but
right.
it's incredible. So yeah, right now that's what I'm listening to, but it used to be a lot of musicals.
Right. So when you're working as an actor, did you think like, okay, I'm going to keep doing this till I one day get to Hollywood? Was that sort of a go for?
It was until I one day get to Broadway.
Okay.
Because yeah, I didn't really ever sort of imagine being in film
right.
because my passion was always theater. And I just think there's something Don't get me wrong. I love TV. I love movies. I love going to them. But I do think there's something different about sitting in a, like sitting and seeing something live.
Right.
Than seeing it on a screen. It's right. just a different experience. And that's the one that I was like, I want that.
Right.
So yeah, it was never Hollywood, but it was always supposed to be, Broadway. Yeah. I was actually in a car accident and my voice became paralyzed. So I couldn't that. And so I was a performer and I was performing all the time. And then, I was in a car accident. My voice became paralyzed and I couldn't perform anymore. And so then it was like, what am I going to do? How am I going to stay in the arts? And that's when I became a director. Cause I realized
how does that your voice become paralyzed
in the car accident? The whiplash caused one of the four nerves that control your larynx to swell. Normally it will unswell. Mine didn't. So, they sewed an implant. So I have an implant in one side of my voice to help me phonate and all that kind of stuff.
Phonate
is like when you make sound to your cords have to come, your vocal cords have to actually come together in order to make sound. And mine was paralyzed. So they couldn't do that because they weren't receiving the message from my brain.
I guess so.
So then that was, so then I had to sort of really figure out, okay, well, how do I stay in the arts? How do I continue to tell stories and how do I use everything I know to be here? And then I was like, oh, I direct. I help other people tell stories. So yeah, so it was always supposed to be me performing, and then that changed a little bit, but for the best, I think.
So was that an easy transition for you though?
No, it was really, really rough. No, it was super rough. But I mean, yeah, it was super rough because, you know, you make plans and you have goals and you have dreams and ideals. And then it was like, oh, just kidding. None of those are happening.
Do you know that phrase? You make plans and God laughs?
Yeah. And this was like, this was definitely, he was having a bit of a chuckle.
Right.
I mean, in the end, it turned out fine. I'm actually probably a better director than I ever would have been a performer.
Right. But your story is also not over.
Well, exactly. Right. So who knows? Who knows what may yet happen?
Right? Seriously.
But that was sort of why it changed from being a performance-based. My trajectory changed from being performance-based to being part of the creative team.
Right. So did you just kind of get together with friends and be like, hey, I'm thinking of directing. Like, next time you got a project, like, give me a nod.
Kind of. So I had the accident, and it took a very long time to kind of figure out, A, what had happened, and then how to fix it. I actually ended up coming down here to see an American doctor to get diagnosed, and I had my surgeries in the States because it's kind of so specialized that was something I couldn't have done in Canada.
But isn't it cheaper in Canada?
Oh, yeah. Definitely cheaper in Canada, but there was no one who seemed able to do it. So I was coming to the States because I knew people who I knew of this doctor, and I knew people who had seen him and people who trusted him. And when you have, this is going to sound immensely corny, but when it's like your voice, especially when you're I used to sing, obviously, more when you're an actor. Your voice is kind of like your Stradivarius. It's your very own, very specific, very special instrument. And when all of a sudden that's not working, there's nothing you can do about it because you can't see it. You don't know why. It's just this thing that's wrong with you.
Were you writing on chalkboards?
At one point.
Dry erase boards, rather?
Yeah. It was a lot of like this sort of using those apps where they'll like speak. You can type something in, then it'll speak it.
Right.
It was that kind of stuff. I got really good at some sign language.
Okay.
Because I could still, for a while, I could still speak, but it wasn't really my voice. Like it wasn't strong. It was kind of weak and it hurt and nothing felt right about it. Anyways, very long saga. Eventually, they figured it all out. I had a bunch of different surgeries, some which resulted in me not being able to speak at all for a while to help recover. And then eventually they just sewed the implant in.
Can it fail?
No, because now it's like part of me. Like, it's just part of my...
It's just a part of
exactly
me.
Exactly, just like that. No, now it's like...
Let's write the musical about you and your wreck.
Oh, God.
And then, like, you know, you struggle with the different instruments and the doctors trying to...
Yeah, you know, there's lots of drama in there. It could be great. I'm not quite sure. It's you know, sort of the Tony Award-winning musical that it would
do you,
need
do you,
to be.
Do you watch the Tonys every year?
Sometimes. Sometimes. I watch them this year.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you agree with their choices?
Sometimes.
Right. I can't say I've watched the Tonys.
Okay.
Ever. I used to watch, so when I was younger, so pre-DVR, you'd watch the award shows.
Right.
And then as I got older, I would DVR them and fast forward through a lot of them. And now I don't even bother.
Yeah. That's the problem with some of those award shows is that so much of it is just, it sometimes feels like so much of it is just for commercials.
Right. And here's the good news. If something really cool happens, it'll be online the next day.
Right.
Do you see what so-and-so said? Nope. Let me go look.
Yeah. Or it'll be on Facebook.
Right. Like apparently Oprah said something cool. I still haven't seen it.
Right.
But apparently I should go look at that.
Yeah. Me too. I haven't seen it either, but everyone talked about it. I was
dude,
like,
beautiful.
Cool. Well done, Oprah.
Right. Exactly. And it's also the point where like, I haven't seen anything, right? Like I have kids, so I don't get out to the movies much. And if I do, it's a kid's movie.
Right.
So I just, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and so some of those films, it's really hard. You're like, I have no idea. I haven't heard. Sometimes you're like, I haven't heard of half of these films. How could I possibly have an opinion?
Right. And now I'm wondering how that's going because so much is being streamed. Like it's one thing when the Emmys started doing that, but it's another thing for movies because sometimes our movies are just now straight to Netflix. Right.
Yeah.
So it's
all. I don't know how that works. Like movies that go straight to Netflix. I don't know if.
Because they're produced by Netflix.
Yeah.
Or Amazon or whoever.
I don't know. Can they are they still up for?
I don't know.
Academy Awards? I have no idea.
It's all nonsense. It's all bullshit.
But it's a very good question.
But seriously, it's all. Dude, there's a really good documentary about the rating system. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Oh, it's so good.
What's it called?
I think it's called This Film Has Not Yet Been Rated.
Oh, get out.
Okay. And he basically uses his own movie as like a part of it.
Oh, interesting.
But he basically found out like. That it's all rigged, basically. That, like, you know, who, you know what I mean? It's all, it's just like most of it, it's all rigged.
Well, there's always way more things happening than you think are happening. Like, way more stuff in the background that's happening that you have no idea about.
Right.
All the time.
Do you watch a lot of Netflix?
I love Netflix.
Okay. Are you watching Dirty Money?
I'm not, actually.
Okay. So start watching it.
Okay.
And it's about, you know, the first episode is about the Volkswagen thing. The second episode is about these guys that had a payday loan thing. The one we just finished, my wife and I, is, or did we even finish it yet? About HSBC and how they're the fucking drug money bank. It's awesome.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's such good stuff.
Oh, cool. Okay.
No. There's another one about healthcare, about this. Anyway, and I love all these, and it also depresses me because,
right, well,
you know. It's all rigged.
Right. And it's because you're finally sort of seeing it, right? It's like they're lifting the veil off this stuff that you're like, I've maybe always kind of thought that.
Right.
Now you're just proving that I knew it.
Exactly. And I have children. I'm trying to give them hope.
Right. Yeah. That's not the television show for that.
Right?
No. Not at all.
I got to find stuff for them to watch then, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. I would say Disney, but that brings a whole mess of other things with it.
Correct.
So, I don't know. Best of luck to you.
All right. Thank you for that. Where were we?
I don't know where we were. Somewhere about, I don't know where we were. Netflix?
How you started directing. Right. And
yeah, that's, I started directing because I couldn't act and I couldn't sing and
right,
I wanted to stay in the arts.
Right. But that doesn't mean that you can. I mean, it doesn't mean that you'd necessarily be good at it or that it would work out.
No, true. True. Apparently I was okay at it. So that people just started giving me opportunities.
That's how one knows that they're good at it. Somebody says, you're okay at this. Come do it over here.
Yeah. Well, I think you sort of do it once and someone goes, hey, that was really good. And you're like, oh,
okay,
cool.
So what was the first one that you directed?
The very first thing I ever directed was a couple of scenes for this small independent opera company in Winnipeg, Manitoba, which is North Dakota, go up.
Got it.
And it, like, middle of winter, it was freezing, it was snowy and gross and everything you think Canada is. And I directed, I think, three three scenes. And I just remember afterwards the singer's going, that was so great. That was so, you should do more of that. And I was like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. Sure.
That's really went just like that.
Yeah. And then I was talking to a friend and she said, oh, you know, there's these people and they're looking for an assistant and then you can go and assist in Italy. And so I was like, okay.
So you went to Italy?
I went to Italy and I assisted on a opera called The Marriage of Figaro there.
It's a pretty famous one.
It's a pretty famous one.
Do you want to hum a few bars from that one?
Yeah. What are those like bars that everyone knows of Nozze though? Just like trying to think. There's like... like the, but it's not, it doesn't have like a lot of tunes that people know. It's not one of those operas that they all, because often with opera, they like take it, they take like, tunes about, and they put it in car commercials. It's not one of those.
Right. What about like the title cut though? Isn't there like Figaro? Isn't there that?
There is, but that is actually not in The Marriage of Figaro.
Who is that from?
That's from The Barber of Seville.
Oh.
Yeah, but interestingly enough, the character is the same.
Barber of Seville.
The Barber of Seville.
Do you remember when Buckwheat had to sing that?
No.
You're not. It was an old Saturday Night Live skit. Anyhow.
No. For me, Figaro is, I always will just think of Bugs Bunny and Tweety.
Okay.
Because they did a whole Barber of Seville take.
Right.
On Looney Tunes.
So you go to Italy.
So I go to Italy.
And how is your Italian?
At that point,
yes.
Pretty abysmal. So, right now, much better.
So, but you did okay? Like,
yeah, I mean, you learn. You're like, okay, I don't know how to order bread.
Right.
So you go, scusa, pointing.
Right.
Per favore?
Right.
And they bring you bread, and you're like, great, okay. And eventually...
It's one thing to, hey, I can't order food. It's another, like, I have to direct a play and direct people and direct craftsmen who need to build things or...
True. I mean, in this particular case, I was a student, and I was the assistant. And a lot of people were speaking English, so it was okay. There were only a couple of instances where I actually had to, like, get my little Italian dictionary out and go, scusate me... Dove la supermercato?
You couldn't use the phone yet.
No, not yet. Also, that was like well before you actually wanted to take your phone to different countries. Because it
cost too much.
It just like you were like, I will be in debt for the next 12 years if I take my phone across an ocean. No.
And so how long were you there?
What, 2 months? 2 months? A month and a half. Then I came back. And then I ended up going over a year later and did a similar thing. And then just started... And then I was like, oh my God, I love this. This assistant.
Have you ever had a straight job?
A straight job. Oh, like, yeah, I definitely have. Because there was a point there where I wasn't getting any work. And so I worked for American Express.
Okay.
For a while. And I worked for the Silver Jeans factory. Silver Jeans is like, it's like a name brand jeans. It's like a hip, funky jean brand. Apparently, I don't really know.
And you did what for those people?
I was a receptionist. I worked in like the back end of the sort of money parts. You know, that's sort of like, oh, this person spent this amount of money. We have to code it to... I was not very good at it.
Right.
But I was good enough to be organized, and that was really what they wanted. They just wanted
someone to be organized.
Sometimes
that's all you need.
They just wanted you to be organized and like be able to say, I have no idea how to do this.
Right.
And then someone would go, oh, that's okay. I'll teach you, or you don't have to do that. And I was like, great, because I have no idea how to do that.
Okay, did you struggle with that? Like, oh, I can't wait to get out of here and be with my artistic friends.
Oh, well, it wasn't even with my artistic friends, but it was like, I just kept thinking, I don't feel like I know what to do. I just sort of feel like I'm not giving to the job what I should be giving because I don't know how to do any of this, and my brain doesn't work like that. I mean, if I had my druthers, even at both of those jobs, I'd like... have the music station on all the time and I'd be humming along or dancing in my chair. Everyone in the office thought I was a little bit insane.
Right.
But, you know, it was the only way I could keep myself sane.
Right. And so when was the moment where you were like, okay, this is it. I'm done going back to the 9-to-5 dealio.
It was when I started getting, it was just when I started getting enough work. So I got offered 3 years ago, I got offered a job in Vancouver that was like, come move out to Vancouver. All you're going to do is work on operas. We're going to train you. We're going to give you all these opportunities. Come on out. And I was like, yes.
Because they shop the world looking for those people?
No, it's what they call a young artist program, and that's actually what I'm in Atlanta as part of.
Do not take it personally that I'm yawning.
No worries.
I'm just yawning.
No worries. I'm not offended. It's what they call a young artist program, and lots of opera companies have them. So the young artist program was like, we need a director, and a bunch of people spoke for me that I had worked with, that I had volunteered for, or, you know, worked in really small situations for. And then, so they were like, great, come out. We'll take you and we'll train you. Come out. Exactly.
My ex-brother-in-law, can you have an ex-brother-in-law?
Sounds about right.
He and his family work at the San Francisco Opera Palace?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
So they're like lifers over there, like in the unions and whatnot. And,
ooh, amazing. Very fancy.
You know, they build sets for everything all the time. And anyway,
that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that kind of stuff. I think it's incredibly impressive. You have to be really like sort of smart in a way that my brain doesn't work to go, this piece of wood is going to do this and is going to support 600 people when we put the elephant across the stage or something like that.
Right.
We're going to do Aida. We're going to send the elephants across the stage.
Right.
We got to make sure.
Yeah, my brain doesn't work that well.
I'm like, I don't understand how that works.
Right. Yeah, my skill set is this, actually. So this is like, I'm not good with my hands. I can't code computers or fix a car. So
right.
I know what you're saying like your voice is your tool.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's, one of the things that I found really interesting when I lost my voice was how much I identified with it. And I remember thinking, I don't know if this is true and it might be completely insane, but who knows? I hear myself speak substantially more than I even see myself in the mirror. Right? Like I actually hear myself talk.
Right, because you only look in the mirror a couple times a day.
Exactly.
Morning, brushing your teeth.
Exactly. But I hear myself speak every day, and I hear myself communicate ideas that are immensely important to me, or are jokes, or you know, things that are sad, or whatever. Like, I do that with my voice. So then to suddenly not have it, or to have it and it be wrong, it not work in the way, like you keep pressing the go button and it keeps going backwards,
right.
Like the gear shift is all messed up,
right.
was actually one of the harder parts of that whole kind of life event, was getting used to what that was and what that kind of meant, because it was so much what I identified with as myself, and I didn't even know that. And
right.
I was like, oh, that's not me. Who's this thing making noise? What is this thing making noise?
Right. And then like if you're stuck using one of those computers, you're going to sound like Stephen Hawking the rest of your life.
Yeah. And And also you have to have a lot of patience for that. Because you want to, like, someone asks you a question, you want to respond.
Right, you're like,
yeah, you have to, like, hold on a second, please. Go find the app, open the app, type it in, press play.
Right.
Or, like, write the whole, and at a certain point, it's almost easier to, like, write the whole thing down.
Than to type it on your phone.
Than to type it on the phone and, you know, do it, or that sort of stuff. Because the impulse is to respond. Someone says, hey, do you want soup? You're like,
Well, you can shake your head for that.
Not if they're in a different room. You'd be so surprised.
What are they doing yelling at you in the other room?
But like, you'd be so surprised. When you talk to your kids,
right?
How often do you talk to them without looking at them?
Right. Stop that.
Exactly.
Knock it off.
Exactly. Or even, so we're going to do this tomorrow.
Right.
Right? Like, because it's just information.
Leave
that.
Leave your brother alone.
Exactly. All of that. And that's the thing that we don't even think about. We don't even think about
right.
that.
Often I'm saying to them, don't yell, please come here. Because they're yelling. And I'm like, they're like, mom or dad. I'm like, I'm not going to yell across the house for you.
Right. Just come here.
Do you have kids or no kids?
I don't have kids.
Would you like to have kids?
Maybe one day. I mean, I think you need to be sort of more settled in a specific place.
Not true, but anyway.
Well, that seems to be the fallacy that I have been led to believe. Honestly, I spend a lot in the last couple of months. I have been here. I have been in San Jose. I have been in Portugal.
Do you know the way to San Jose?
Only a little bit, and it involves having to get on an airplane. So if the pilot doesn't know, I'm really, really stuck. But good pun.
Okay, glad you caught that.
I caught it.
Moving on. Yeah, so you're traveling a lot.
Yeah, so when you're traveling all that, like that much, sometimes particularly for me, because I'm still sort of starting out in this career, I don't yet know really where I want to be. This is my second year in Atlanta, and so I really like it here. So maybe I would like to stay here. We'll see, you know, visa-wise what happens and all that kind of stuff. But it's sort of hard to find a base when you're...
Did they move you here?
No, I moved myself here. So when I got the job here, they helped me get the visa, and then I moved myself here.
Okay. And which part of town did you choose to settle in?
I lived in a couple different areas, and now I live near Atlantic Station. Because that's where the opera's really close to Atlantic Station.
Right.
So it's nice when you finish work at 11 o'clock at night to only have a 10-minute drive home.
Right.
As opposed to driving for an hour.
Yeah.
I'm good without that again.
Were you driving for an hour where you lived before?
Or? Yeah, where I grew up, because the nearest city was an hour away. So if you worked in the city, you drove for
an
hour.
So that just became part of your life?
Yeah. I mean, it was different than driving in Atlanta traffic.
Right.
Like, that's a whole... Atlanta traffic...
Like, an hour with no traffic is, like, 55 miles away instead of, like, 18 miles away.
Exactly.
Got it.
Right. I mean, Atlanta traffic is... That's commitment.
Yeah.
It's amazing, actually, because, like, you have to have... patience and understanding. You know what you do, otherwise it'd be way worse than what it is.
I have a complete opposite feeling about that.
I just think, like, everyone demonstrates so much patience because it's always like that, and you still get in the car.
But they're not. Do you understand that we have a massive alcohol and drug addiction problem in this country?
Yes.
Okay, so people go to their jobs that they hate,
mm-hmm.
then they sit in the car,
mm-hmm.
which they also hate,
right?
And then they check out with opioids.
Fascinating.
So that they can have a house as big as their neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah. There's
not everyone, but a lot of folks.
But many. But
I'm not one of those people, by the
way. All right. Well, I would buy that from you. From hanging out with you, I'd guess that. But
in our short time together, you'd guess that.
I would have guessed that about you. I still think that there is a level of patience to, no matter what state you're in, there is a level of patience to surviving Atlanta traffic.
No, for sure. And now that I think about it, when I last drove in traffic many, many, many years ago, there was books on tape, but wasn't a lot of that. Now with podcasts and everything, I can imagine you can get a lot of good listening done.
Yeah, you can get
in your car. You could learn languages.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, you can hear entire like musicals or operas. There's so much you could do.
Right.
I mean, and I think, I don't know because I've never done it, but I think aren't there like apps where you can actually talk, like dictate emails?
Well, I mean, I could do that with my phone right now. You don't even need an app for it.
Really? I don't know how to do that. I'm not particularly tech savvy. So
it's not, that's, you don't, but I mean, but like every, like 5 years ago, you needed a really good phone. Now I don't have my iPhone, but I would just say, like, if you went open email, it would open and then you would just do whatever. And then
I recognize that it's supposed
talk
to do
text
that.
Has gotten so good.
Talk to text. Is that what the little microphone button is?
Yes.
Oh, never really tried that. I was like, oh, don't record me. Just, I don't know what it does.
Yeah, it's very effective. It's very effective. Yeah.
So if you can do that in the car, and because it's not going anywhere, you're just sitting in traffic. I don't know.
But you're still looking down, sort of. So.
Oh, are you? Okay. Like I said, I've never done it, so I don't really know.
That's interesting that you've never done talk. Like, everybody's done talk text, even to their friends.
No, I really don't. I text a lot, but I've just with my fingers, with my thumb.
You're a double thumb.
I'm a double thumb.
Killing
all the way.
It on the.
Yeah.
Are you big on the social media?
Not really. I use Facebook and that's about it. I've not yet figured out what Instagram does.
Okay.
And I can't for the life of me figure out why to tweet.
Well, different platforms serve different purposes. Mm-hmm. I would say if you have not got on Twitter to this point, you could skip it. It's fine.
Okay,
great. If you had it or you were good at it or you found reasons to communicate that way, I find Facebook to be much of a cesspool. And after years of being mostly on Facebook and some on Instagram, I'm now more on Instagram because I find it more pleasant.
Instagram is all about photos, right? Like, you have to take photos, don't you?
Well, at the end of the day, it's about conveying a message or a story.
Oh, really?
Yes. So there's not a lot of, here's my political argument of the day. There's not a lot of, you wouldn't believe how this customer service treated me shitty. Like, there just isn't a lot of that. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's a very different world.
Oh, I think the reason I've never gotten into Instagram is I don't take pictures. I never think about it. I'm too busy enjoying the moment to bother to take a picture.
Well, then
of the
even better for you. Even better for you. First of all, the cameras are so good on them now. Like,
that's true.
Instagram started out as like photos only, mostly, right? Here's a pretty flower. I'm a photographer or whatever. And now it's everybody. And certainly there are still good and bad uses of it. But, you know, so like for me, if I put up something that I think is funny, mm-hmm. I'm going to put it there and people say, ha, that's funny. You right. know what I mean? Or, you know, here's my children doing something ridiculous or whatever.
But it's a visual. It's always about a visual entity. It's not like an idea. It's not something you type or an idea that you're sharing.
Well,
it's a visual.
Well, but if you're good at both, right? Like if you post a funny picture and then the caption underneath it can also be interesting.
Got it. Okay.
Then.
Okay. No. I honest to goodness have never been on there, so I have no idea how it works. So I'm just asking.
Right.
Oh, cool.
Okay. But I do think it's kind of like trying to describe like, you know, being in an airplane or on a roller coaster, like you actually have to do it. So
right.
I'm not saying you have to, but if you choose to go there and then you find, you know, a lot of people use it for, including myself, for their own, because I work for myself, like their own personal brand, as it were.
Oh, right. Okay. Right.
And so it's great for that.
Right. Of course.
People can find you mm-hmm. Either through certain hashtags or just because they want to kind of follow what you have going on.
Right.
So yeah, one day you might do that for yourself.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just always thought it had to do with pictures.
Right.
And I just, honest to goodness, I can spend an entire week with my family exploring, like I was in Portugal around Christmas with my family and didn't take a single photo. Didn't even occur to me because I was too busy enjoying it. And then I was like, oh, got on the plane on the ride home and I went, oh, no photo. Oops.
Right.
Because I just don't think about it. And so that's why I thought, oh, Instagram, there's just no freaking point.
Right.
I'll never remember to take a photo.
Well, if you get on it at one point, we can listen back on this conversation and it will be super humorous.
All right. Well, I will look forward to that. We'll see. We'll give it a try. I'm all right. For trying it.
So let's talk about what you're up to now.
Sure. So we, right now I am the young artist director with the Atlanta Opera. And we just did, and well, we're still doing, a touring version of Magic Flute, which is an opera by Mozart that was performed at the Center for Puppetry Arts. And it was performed there because Center for Puppetry Arts made us a bunch of puppets that the singers used in.
So it was a total collab, bro.
Pretty much.
That's the kids call it, collab.
Collab, bro.
Well, they say collab. I added the bro.
You added the bro. Okay. Well, you know, artistic licensing.
Right.
Yeah, so it was a collaboration. They built us these incredible, giant 3-person puppets that are now still touring around to schools in the area. That was sort of the last thing I did in Atlanta. And at the same time, I was also working on a production of this Elixir of Love that was in Vancouver. So lots of fun times in airports.
My nephew is an actor. And one of the first things he did was he did one of those touring things where it's a bunch of like, I want to say morality plays, but they're not all morality plays.
No, but I understand what you're saying.
There's like 5 or 6 of them and they mm-hmm. do them like in different towns and different schools.
Yep.
And they have to also like, they're also like the build crew.
Yep.
And so he told me it was pretty brutal.
It's hard.
Because they're using old, heavy fucking sets.
Yeah. It's, I mean, doing school tours is one of the hardest things I've ever done as a performer, but also one of the most interesting things because you learn so much about audiences.
Right.
Because kids are fantastic.
Right.
They will tell you real quick.
Right.
If they are not on board.
Right.
Or if they are.
And when they are, it's magical, right?
Well, it's magical or it's fascinating.
Right.
Like, because I remember there's a moment in the show I went to watch one of the school tour performances they did. And there was a moment where, there's a moment at the beginning, there's this big old dragon monster thing and it comes on stage and these ladies have to kill it.
Right.
And so they kill the dragon monster and they save the prince. And there were these little girls in the front row going, yeah, kill it. Yeah, go. And I was like, okay. And they were so into it.
Right.
They were like, yeah, girls, you kill that monster. Girl power all the way. They were all about it.
Right.
And they just, and after that moment, like that sort of row of girls was in. It didn't matter what happened.
Right.
For the rest of the show, because they were all, and then they just continued to talk to the performers for the rest of the show.
Right.
It's like, I don't know why you're doing that. Why are you doing that? And the performer said it was totally amazing.
Right.
They're like, I just wanted to respond and be like, I don't know. Give me a second. I'm getting there. Right. I've got 3 more bars before I can answer you. Hold on.
Right.
But the school tours are hard because you have to give so much energy. and you are setting up and you are tearing down the set, you know, sometimes twice a day. And in our show, you're also singing like full operatic repertoire, and you are operating ginormous three-person puppets. So it can be a little tricky, but I do think it's such an amazing thing. At least that's what I remember from it.
Cool. So what should we tell people about, like, more information that you want them to know about the opera and whatnot?
The opera coming up. I'm going to direct Carmen for the opera in April.
That's a famous one.
It's a very famous one, and I'm really excited about. It's my first time directing Carmen, which is so exciting and slightly nerve-wracking at the same time. But the one thing I love about Carmen is that everybody knows it. Even people who think they've never, ever heard opera before in their life, I swear you have heard it in at least 4 car commercials before. Like, there are pieces that you just know.
And which car commercials?
I don't remember. For one time, I think it was like Chevy was using one, and I think Subaru at one point. You would be so surprised at how much opera shows up in commercials.
We should Google this, but I didn't bring my phone in here, which I usually always do for these exact kind of moments.
It's totally Google. I wish I could remember, but there is, and it's always car commercials. I mean, there's other commercials as well, but always car commercials. If you hear it, every time I hear it,
and it's public domain, right? So it's free.
It's totally free.
That's why they do it.
The music's really wonderful, and the reason they do it is because the music does kind of get at our insides a little bit in ways we don't understand. Like, that's sort of like, oh yeah, yeah, get you fired up. Or it's like, oh yeah, that's beautiful. That's really sort of seductive. And you're like, oh yeah.
Right.
And that's what that music is doing. And interestingly enough, in the story that it's taken from, that's what that music is also doing.
Right.
But yeah, so my the thing about Carmen is that I guarantee almost everybody has heard parts of it before. Right. You just don't know.
And which part of the directing process is the most rewarding?
The part I think is the most fun is the part where you get to sort of meet with the performers and explore. Because so much of it you do by yourself. It's a lot of like research. I can tell you an awful lot about what Spain was like in like the 1830s right now. Whole ton of a lot of information. But the part that's really interesting is to meet with the performers and look at the music and look at the text and kind of go, okay, why are you saying that? You know, you're talking about like Don José, who's the leading man in the opera. He at one point has an aria, and he sings about this flower that she threw down on the ground, and he sort of kept it. And it's like, okay, well, why? Or why didn't you say that 5 minutes ago? Why now? What is it about this moment that means you have to say that now?
Right.
Because in the real world, in life, we just make it up, right? Like, we just make up what we're going to say. That's how live conversations work. But in opera or in theater or even in film, the performer already knows what they're going to say.
Right.
So you have to figure out, there still has to be that moment of discovery, of realizing why it's this moment that you suddenly have to say those words and not 5 minutes from now, 2 minutes ago, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's the most interesting part.
And which part keeps you up the most at night?
Often what keeps me up the most is the schedule. It's trying to figure out how you do it all, right? Because you want to give people time to explore and to play and to sort of figure out how the story gets put together. And sometimes you have to do that. It's about whether or not where you're going to find the time with the right humans to make that all happen.
Right.
It's a lot of like Tetrising boxes and scheduling around.
What's your go-to coffee order there?
This one is, it's called a medicine ball.
Okay.
And it's tea with steeped lemonade. Oh, sorry. Yeah. They had to give me a citrus defender because they were out of the other type of tea.
Are these off the menu, like secret Starbucks shit? Because I've never heard of a defender or a medicine ball.
This is not like on the menu, but you ask for it and they all know what it is.
Okay. Is it a Canada thing?
No, it's not. I'm in Atlanta. I got it in Atlanta.
But I'm saying I've been to a lot of Starbucks and I've never heard of a medicine ball nor a defender.
Well, I'm pretty convinced that if you go and you ask them for it, they will know what it is. You just ask for a medicine ball. It's like it's two types of tea with water and honey and steeped lemonade.
So sounds like somebody that's like getting ready to sing in the opera a little over that, maybe.
Yeah.
But you're not the singer. You're just...
I am not the singer.
What's your go-to Waffle House order?
I have to be honest. I've never been to Waffle House.
You need to have that gentleman that brought you here...
take me to Waffle House.
Take you to the Waffle House.
That is the second time that has come up in the week that I have been here.
There are no accidents. You yes. need to go to the Waffle House.
All right, all right, all right. I will go to the Waffle House. I don't know. I didn't realize it was such a thing.
If you're going to spend time in the South, you should definitely dine at the Waffle House. Now,
okay.
Pretty much anybody, like when he comes back, if mm-hmm. I ask him, what's your go-to order, he'll know.
Really?
Everybody knows.
Fascinating. Yeah, no. I mean, I did finally, I went to Chick-fil-A. I thought that was... I was doing really well with that.
Right. No, that's good. You should definitely go to Chick-fil-A. But you can also... They have Chick-fil-A in New Jersey, though.
Okay.
You know, Waffle House is like... We're pretty proud of it down here, down south.
Got it. Okay. All right. All right. Fair enough. I thought I was doing so well with Chick-fil-A. I didn't realize it was subpar to the Waffle House.
Yes.
In the experience of...
The South,
the
yes.
South. Okay. All right.
All right. Well, I think this was a good first chat.
Awesome.
For two people that don't know each other at all and sat down and talked about stuff.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you so much. It was lovely.
There you have it, folks. That is our episode this week. Maybe I'll surprise you with another one this week. Maybe I won't. It just all depends. So much good stuff to bring you. Hope you're following the Instagram and the Instagram stories to see the exciting kinds of guests I'm bringing to you. Let me know who you want to hear and see. Go to iTunes, leave a review, or send me a note, matt@obscuracymedia.com, or send me a note on any of the social platforms, which is, I'm Matt B. Davis. I'm also ATL Podcast on Instagram. Hope you're having a great start to your summer, late spring, whatever the hell it is. I gotta run.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This Valentine's Day, Dunkin's got the perfect pairings to show your love. So get down on one knee with a dozen brownie batter donuts and a cocoa mocha signature latte. Or make them swoon with a strawberry dragon fruit Dunkin' refresher with a Cupid's Choice donut. Are you ready for love? America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer.